Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, January 31st. Let the record reflect that the time is 1 p.m. Today we have Representative Craig Johnson, Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Stutes, Representative Mina, Representative Gray, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff that's assisting today, Shannon McCain with House Records, Jake Wade with the LIO, and Buddy Witt, my committee aide. First, I'd like to welcome members to the Transportation Committee, and as a matter of introduction to the public, I invite you to tell committee members and those who may be tuning in a little about yourself, the district you represent, and anything transportation-related that is particular importance to you during this legislature and the Transportation Committee. So I think I'll start with Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Do we say through the chair?
Not when you're talking right to me, that's fine.
Sounds good. Hello, everyone. My name is Representative Genevieve Mina. I represent House District 19, which is Airport Heights, Mountain View, and Western Russian Jack. Transportation is a big concern for me because our district is sandwiched between two highways, and we also have a business district that runs right through. And so for my neighbors over in Airport Heights, we have a lot of urban cyclists and individuals who are very enthusiastic about urban commuting. But once you head over to Russian Jack and Mountain View, we have the highest percentages of individuals in Anchorage who don't have access to a car. And so non-motorized pathways are incredibly important for my area and ensuring that there is adequate safety, public transportation, and other methods for individuals to commute to work, to access medical services and whatever they need. But I'm also a big ally to all forms of our transportation as well in our state, especially to the Marine Highway System and for our airports and for our ports.
Thanks, Representative Gray.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. My name is Andrew Gray, and I represent House District 20, which is the UMed district, which includes Campbell Park, Russian Jack, and the University area. My interest in transportation, as far as my district goes, is that we have Tudor, which is a state road, which results in the most fatalities per year. It is a very, very dangerous road, and it is one that my district knows very well. But like Representative Mina, I am very interested in all aspects of transportation throughout the state, including the ferry system. Thank you.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. I am Sarah Vance. I represent House District 6 of the Lower Kenai Peninsula, and I have a variety of transportation needs in my community. Better roads, we name our potholes in my community, and I have been very active in removing abandoned vehicles on the peninsula, and thanks to DOT and the commissioner's work and the team there, they have been able to remove a lot in the name of public safety. And my interest is also in our ports. We need a very strong port system, infrastructure in the state, as well as, ferries and, airports, everything in between. So I think you're going to have a lot of interest in all things transportation.
Representative McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom McKay, District 15, which is Southwest Anchorage, the communities of Bayshore, Campbell Lake, and Sand Lake. This is my second term in the legislature, and I served on this committee in my first term. And I guess my immediate issue with transportation is snow plowing, which we're still working on in Anchorage. And I appreciate hearing the report today from the commissioner, and we want to have good roads, obviously, and taking care of our airports and our ferries and the railroad and everything else that comes under the broad category of transportation. So, thank you,
Representative Stutes. Can you do it without saying anything about ferries?
Oh, probably not. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Louise Stutes, and I'm from Kodiak, District Number 5, and I represent Kodiak, Cordova, Seward, and some of the smaller villages around. And, of course, I'm interested in all transportation, but my focus has been the Alaska Marine Highway System, and I'm particularly interested in making sure that it is a long-term sustainable entity for the state of Alaska. And so that would be my main focus, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stutzen. Mr. Rules Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Craig Johnson from District 10. I believe that nothing can stifle economic growth faster than poor transportation. And I am big on growing the economy in the private sector. And an essential part of that is getting goods and services to the public. And that's what transportation is all about.
Thanks. So I appreciate you all being here. My goals for this committee and this legislature are to hear updated presentations from all transportation public facilities and entities in the state. That includes DOT roadways and highways, aviation, including the Ted Stevens International Airport update. It's going to be very important to me personally, as well as I'd like to hear something about UAF drones. The Marine Highway, of course, and especially the plans for the Tustamina replacement. I'm really interested in that. Representative Stutz and I both have a history. Well, she lives there, but I have a history in Kodiak, and I've ridden the Rusty Tusty many times, and we called it the Rusty Tusty in 1981 when I first rode it. So also interested in the facilities, some of the facilities that the DOT manages for us, for the state. Alaska Railroad, ports and upgrades, port upgrades and construction updates, especially Nome, Port McKenzie, Homer, the Seward dock for the ferry, for the Alaska Railroad. So very interested in all of that. I'd like an update from ADA on the West Susitna access. And then I'd like to hear all the bills that are presented to the committee for review and explore committee bills that will help us all with transportation and infrastructure that the state's going to need for resource development. So today, however, we have one item on the agenda. The committee will hear an overview from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. At the request of my office, the department will touch on major construction projects throughout the state as part of this initial presentation. Appearing on behalf of the department is Commissioner Ryan Anderson, and his able legislative assistant Andy Mills is here as well. And Deputy Commissioner Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner John Binder, Acting Northern Region Director Joe Kemp, Central Region Director Wolfgang Jung, and South Coast Region Director Lance Mary. So I'd also like to mention that Representative Mears is in the audience, and I appreciate your interest. And remind everybody to silence your cell phones if you haven't already. I've done that a few times myself and had to buy donuts. So, Commissioner, welcome to the House Transportation Committee. If you and your staff would like to come to the presenter's table, and those not present are joining us by Teams, and please place your name on record and begin your presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Chair McCabe, and thank you, Transportation Committee. I appreciate being here today. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Today, Catherine Keith, one of my deputy commissioners, is not able to make it, unfortunately, but we're going to continue on, and Deputy Commissioner Bender is online for any questions as we go forward. For today, we're going to do a broad overview of the department. I think we have, as Chair McCabe had mentioned, there's a lot of good upcoming, more detailed presentations. And so just for context, you know, I'll be going through relatively quickly. There's a lot of information to cover. And Chair McCabe, would you like us to pause after each slide for questions, or would you like to just go through the presentation?
Sure.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, with that, I will begin the presentation. A quick slide on our DOT organization. As you can see, the commissioner has two deputy commissioners, the three regional directors, Northern, South Coast, and Central Region. And then, of course, we have our legislative liaison, our communications director. We have a chief construction officer, and of course, our administrative services director. The regions overall are focused on planning, design, construction, and really project delivery, and then the maintenance and operations groups. And then, of course, you can see we have various other entities underneath statewide design and engineering services, program development, highway safety, Alaska Marine Highways, of course, and change management. And we also have leasing, the international airport system, measurements and standards, commercial vehicle compliance, statewide equipment fleet, facility services, safety coordination. We also have four boards that work under the DOT purview, the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, the Aviation Advisory Board, the Roads and Highways Advisory Board, and the Executive Facilities Management Advisory Committee. Our mission at DOT is keep Alaska moving. We have core values of integrity, excellence, respect, and safety. And one of our purposes under the highway section is that we oversee a network of highways that link together cities and communities throughout the state, thereby contributing to the development of commerce and industry in the state that aids in the extraction and development of its resources and improves economic and general welfare of the people of the state. This really, you know, I think when you look at DOT and what I love about DOT is we're a can-do organization. I think, you know, we're out there, we're every day, we're interacting with the public. There's a lot of interactions that go on. We hear the good, we hear the bad, but we're really an organization that's really trying to be out there and to be the doers in the state. And so that's one thing that I really enjoy that I think is a really powerful thing with DOT. This slide is a representation of Alaska's transportation system in terms of DOT infrastructure. What you'll see is we have a total of 237 airports that are managed and operated by DOT. That's more than any other state in the nation. And this is really something unique to Alaska on the rural aviation side and how we manage our aviation system. You'll also see all the red dots. Those are all of the M&O, the maintenance stations. These are our staff on the ground. You know, each station is staffed with our snowplow operators, our mechanics, our folks that are out there doing the job. And then, of course, you can see our National Highway System network and our Alaska Marine Highway System network, which is the dotted line across the coast. And just one thing to note, the Alaska Marine Highway System, it basically runs a span from Florida to California. That's the amount of territory that we're covering when we're operating that system. In terms of our overall infrastructure, 5,682 centerline miles of road. A lot of times we speak in terms of lane miles and how we maintain things because that's basically an 8-foot lane, you know, going in either direction. The maintenance with our maintenance stations, our Alaska Marine Highway System, 9 ferries, 35 ports of calls. We do have 6 harbors, 851 owned bridges. DOT does have 3 tunnels. You know, the measurements and standards is another big piece of what we do. A lot of people don't know that when you're out there and getting fuel at the fuel pumps, our guys are the ones, and gals, are the ones that are out there making sure that is an accurate reading when you pump your gas, that's the right amount of gallons are getting pumped and getting charged correctly. That's DOT that's out there doing that. We have the statewide equipment fleet, so we provide the equipment for the entire state of Alaska, all the agencies. We have public facilities out there that we have 827 maintained. And then commercial vehicle enforcement, of course. We also have the way stations that are along the highways. So when the trucking industry is moving freight and goods, we're making sure that the weights and the requirements are being met so those goods can be moved safely, and they also don't damage our infrastructure. And so you can see DOT is a big organization, 3,393 permanent, full-time, part-time, and non-permanent employees, 8 labor unions, and 8 locations.
So I have a question, Commissioner, on the commercial vehicle enforcement. A number of years ago, there were a number of commercial vehicle enforcement sort of officers that went through the academy in Sitka, from what I understand. Still true, or is that all done with the troopers now? Do you still have commercial vehicle folks out there sort of patrolling and looking for the bandit and the...
it's commercial vehicle, Chairman McCabe, commercial vehicle compliance is our folks out there. And yes, they're still out there. So for example, if you were at a way station and you didn't meet the requirements, yeah, you can get penalized for that. So that is something that we're still doing out there. Correct.
But they're not driving the roads and looking for trucks, issues with trucks or anything. They're just right there at the way station.
That is correct. I mean, unless there's some type of complaint or something that we have to respond to, it's typically that type of scenario.
Okay, thanks.
The next slide is Alaska DOT's budget and our funding sources. As you can see in the FY 2024 governor's proposed, the overall budget is $1.9 billion. Of that, $438 million is in operating, and our capital is about $1.4 billion. If we break down the operating, you can see that the Marine Highway System is $157 million. Our Highways, Rural Aviation, and Facilities is $147 million, and then International Airports is $110 million. When it comes to our capital, you'll see, you know, over half of our program is in the surface transportation program, which is our highways infrastructure. $462 million is in our airport improvement program, and that's those 237 airports throughout the state. And then, of course, we have our program match and AMHS overhaul, statewide equipment fleet, and then other statewide federal programs.
Good question. I have a question from Representative Vance.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner, would you speak to, on the operating budget, just briefly, all other functions? Because I think we can see some of the highlighters, but just describe what all other functions are for us.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance. Yeah, the other functions, so measurement standards and commercial vehicle compliance is one. That would be included in that. There's management and support services. The commissioner's office is included. The finance and budget, human resources. We have some procurement, statewide procurement. Information technology would be another one. And then the overall program, the capital program management and oversight would be another example of the types of functions that would be within that budget.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Through the chair. Commissioner, can you? You may not know this right off the top of your head, but can you break down what that federal program match is? Does it go to different departments in DOT?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutes, the federal program match, that would be the match dollars that is representative of our capital program. So for the highway side, the $755 million, the airport side, the $462 million, all has the match requirements associated with it. And that would be the match that would go towards the infrastructure projects.
So that does not include any match dollars for the Marine Highway System?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, that if there was the ferry boat funds, that would include the match for those. If we're referencing any of the discretionary grants that are coming our way, it wouldn't represent any of those, just because we haven't secured all of that yet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. For clarification, is this all GF?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that's a great question. No, this is our overall budget. So when you see things like the surface transportation program, that primarily is federal receipts, along with the airport improvement program. If we were looking for a GF budget graph, we can get that to you. That wouldn't be this.
If we could, Mr. Chairman, I'd appreciate that.
Yes, if you wouldn't mind, you can send it to my office and I'll distribute it.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thanks. Continue.
Okay. This slide just is representative of our team at DOT. As you can see, again, we're a big organization. We have three regions. You can see how the regions are encompassed on the slide. And then you can see all of the various other divisions within DOT that work to support the infrastructure in our state. Again, it's a big organization, but we do act as a team. And we do pull resources from all of our teammates when the situation arises. And so some of these examples would be Typhoon Mirbok, for example, spanned the regions. And so we're pulling resources. We're figuring out where we've got resources to help. But it doesn't matter which region and across agencies as well. So that's how we think of ourselves. We want to make sure we make the most of what we have and we work in that regard. One thing that goes along with the budgets and the resources is how we invest. And with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, we've spent a lot of time not only reaching out to the public and discussing where are the infrastructure needs in the state, but what is important when it comes to the law, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, and how those funds are being allocated, and how we can really line all of these things up to do what is in the best interest of Alaska. And we've come up with five infrastructure strategic investment areas that we believe as we go forward, we want to track and make sure that, you know, when we're working in these areas, we can understand if the decisions we're making, the investment choices we're making, are really going to move the needle for how improvements in Alaska. The first one, of course, is safety. DOT, you know, safety is a top priority for us. And you'll see that in, you know, like our investments in the safety corridor projects, you know, in the Matsu Valley or down on the Seward Highway, on the Sterling, those types of things. You're going to see us continue to invest there and really put a focus on that. Economic vitality for Alaska, that's a really big one for us. You're going to see those types of investments in our freight corridors. Really, you know, we've been doing some work with the Port of Alaska and understanding, you know, what is it that we need to make sure that we're all working together on to make sure those goods and services are moving. The state of good repair, those are our projects where we just got to keep our infrastructure in good shape. And the bridges are a big focus right now nationwide. We're doing okay in Alaska, but we got to keep on it. We got to keep that going. Resiliency. These days, there's a lot of funding coming up for resiliency within the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. But we also saw with Typhoon Mirbok and just these disasters that are going on and the emergency events that we're coming up against, to stay focused on that and to really make sure we're investing the right things there is important. And then sustainability it's a new one for us. It's with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It's a primary thing that's coming up, electric vehicles. We're also looking at a carbon reduction program that's basically mandated by the federal government. And so we're trying to think of how do you do sustainability in Alaska that makes sense, knowing that we're different up here. We're a northern state. But there are some things like converting our highway, all of our street lighting to LEDs. You know, things like that where they make sense for us. They make things better. So we're taking a look at it like that, and you should see more on this as we move forward.
Representative Vance.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner, will you be providing more presentations on the sustainability and how that's impacting the infrastructure? Is that something that's going to come in the budget conversations? Because I don't want to, like, open that up right now in the middle of this presentation. But, for instance, you know, I know that the roads are degrading quicker, and there's different things that you can do. Is that something that you already have planned to present to us, or is that a future request?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance, that could be a future request, and okay. We'd be happy to honor that, absolutely. And you will see things in our capital budget that's coming forward that I think you'll see those things showing up as well.
Okay, thank you.
Continue, please.
Another focus for us is these days is organizational excellence. This is something that with all the changes going on, you know, in workforce across the nation, across the world, we felt that DOT really needs to put a focus to make sure we understand how things are changing, that we're doing what we can for our workforce, you know, our entire DOT team, so that people, we're putting a focus on organizational excellence. You can see we have identified these areas of focus: workforce, communication, culture, innovation, information, resourcing, and project delivery. We actually built teams, and they're cross department teams where we've taken folks from all different modes, all different divisions, put them together in rooms to talk about things like workforce. What do we need to do? What's within our control so that we can keep a handle on this situation? And they've come up with really good ideas. You know, some things are, how do we do our own processes better and quicker, more efficient? And some ideas are things where we've come up with, you know, mission critical incentive pay, where we've had to tackle certain areas where our mission is threatened. We don't have enough employees to keep an airport open, for example, and we've got to find solutions. But some of the things that have come up are scheduling, going on a 2x2 schedule versus a normal, you know, 4-on, 3-off kind of thing. And so we identify those things, you know, with these teams, and then we go out and seek implementation. So it's really trying to be an action-focused way to go after these things. They're not studies. They're groups of people coming together and focused, and how do we take action.
How is your staffing right now? I know at the end of last year there were some staffing struggles, and in other committees we've been talking about trooper staffing and that sort of stuff. So can you give us an idea what your vacancy rate is for operators or for the entire department?
Yeah, Chair McCabe. I would hesitate to give you for the entire department, as depending on the, we're so big, the divisions, it's really varies depending on where we're at. As I think Representative Stutes know, on the Marine Highway System, if you looked at all the number of PCNs, we're at 50%. It's pretty tough on that system. When you look at the equipment operators, our snowplow operators, our mechanics, it really is dependent these days on location. And so depending on the area you're in, for example, we got on the West Coast, out of Nome, I'll use, for example, that's been tough out there. That was one area where we had to institute mission critical incentive pay because the number of staff, the vacancy rate started exceeding 50%. And that gets to a point where it's not sustainable to keep that airport open during big storm events. So we instituted these things, and then they start coming down a bit. We've had a lot. Anchorage International Airport has had some struggles. We're working through those as well. But I wouldn't say it's any overall pattern to it. It is typically more geographic focused or mode focused, we could say. So that's how I would describe that situation. I will say one of the solutions that came out of the workforce team was we have a vacancy report by maintenance district every week now, so we can see patterns. And so when some of these things start coming up, you'll start losing people. We see it quicker now. So that's been helpful.
Thanks.
Another big topic these days, information. And we are making changes. We're trying to keep up with technology. I mean, I don't know about all of you, but when you're in the lower 48 and you have that Google Maps up, it just seems like it knows everything about everything going on the highways. And so we're trying to take our systems. We had some old systems when it gets to construction reporting, a thing called Navigator. And what we're doing is we're converting now to everything to one integrated system with the 511. And this will take us a little bit of time, but it feels like the right thing to do. I think there's some efficiencies here. And we'll also have some cost savings as we go forward. So that is a big focus for us on that traffic front.
So very interested in this. Had some conversations with Mr. Mills about new technology, putting locators maybe in sanding trucks. And I can envision people in the Matsu lined up at a coffee shop just waiting for the sanding truck to go by, watching on their phones, and then the sanding truck goes by and they all follow them to Anchorage like a little parade. But those kinds of technologies, I think, at least for the folks in my district that commute to Anchorage, are extremely important. I mean, we've got Facebook pages that say, the Glen Highway, there's like four pages that you can go on and find out how the people that have been, the scouts, if you will, have been out on the Glen Highway and how bad it is and if you want to stay home or not. But if you guys had something in your trucks that we could access, I mean, the cameras are awesome in the mapping system that you have, but even taking it to the next level is, I'd be really interested to hear maybe in the future something about that as well. So ideas for that. And maybe they just came out of Andy's mind. I don't know. But
Chair McCabe, I know Andy is usually pretty solid when he's talking to you. So other states have done that. And I think Iowa is one where you can go on their website and you can see the track of plow. And so we're looking at those real hard and what's possible for Alaska. So we do have some connectivity issues in Alaska that make it a little tougher. But not to say these things aren't possible. So absolutely. The other piece of this, of course, is the collection of data. And we recognize that in Alaska, we have an Alaska DOT starting to consolidate where we collect a lot of data all over the state, but consolidate it into one place where we can start, putting that out there for people. I had an opportunity to see the up in Fairbanks, the Department of Public Safety actually has their dispatch center, and they dispatch for over 75% of the state, because they've been able to consolidate. And I think that's really impressive and something where DOT should look at is so that there's a one-stop shop for people to go to get the information on the roadways and other information that's DOT and transportation related.
Oh, sorry. Representative Mina.
Thank you. Through the chair, related to streamlining and centralizing the data, do you work with local municipalities and government for their transportation departments and how they use data. So, you know, I used to serve on the Public Transit Advisory Board at the Municipality of Anchorage, and I know that with the Anchorage I-Team that they spend a lot of time being able to use traffic data for their public transit app. So I'm wondering if that's also part of this conversation.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, we do work with everyone. I wouldn't say that we have any systems that are necessarily bringing it together, but we all do share data regularly. So it's just maybe not as real time as people are looking for.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then Chair McCabe, also, we are, so as DOT's process moving forward with data and trying to consolidate this, we're having a data summit next week where we're just bringing folks together, and it will include the municipality and others to start just tackling this problem and seeing what we can do with Alaska. So we are taking steps. So we're looking forward to it. And with the funding programs right now, I think there's a lot there that is there for us to assist. So
thanks.
Okay. With that, I am going to pass the baton here to Regional Director Wolfgang Young to talk about Central Region 2023 construction projects.
Thanks. So, Wolfgang, if you want to put yourself on record, almost retired Wolfgang Young, go ahead with your presentation.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, thank you for that that introduction there. Again, my name is Wolfgang Young. I'm the Regional Director for Central Region Department of Transportation, working for the Commissioner and working on all the good things that we do in Central Region for capital projects and maintenance and operations. I've got four quick slides today to go over with you. I'm not going to read the details of every single slide, but I'll just kind of hit the highlights of each of those four slides. And if you have questions, feel free to ask, and we can, but I have the answer. We'll be sure and get the answer for you. The first slide that you see out of here, I'm hoping that you see, is the titled Central Region 2023 Construction Region-Wide Projects. This is just a snapshot of some of the projects out in the rural areas that we have going on in 2023. Of note, we're doing our last automated weather observation system install out in Crooked Creek. We've already completed AWAS systems at Perryville, Akiachek, and Tununek, and we're pending transfer of those AWAS weather stations to the FAA. They will be maintained and operated from here on out. That estimate is around $10 million for this program, and will provide invaluable weather information to our pilots flying around rural Alaska, and we're really pleased to see some investment in this part of our transportation system. Second one that I just wanted to highlight, we've got airport resurfacing projects at a number of airports to include Nutok, Togiak, Ekwok, Unapichuk, and Amatlak. Total value of all those projects, all said and done, is just a little over $70 million. Really happy to get those things up and running and almost through to completion this year. Final highlighted project on this map is, of course, our Bethel Main Runway reconstruction. This project constructed taxiway improvements to date, with runway work remaining for the summer of 2023. Estimated project value, $46 million. So pretty significant investment for us overall out in the rurals. And again, this is in recognition of, you know, 80%+ of our communities really only having transportation access through our airport system. So we will always look forward to making those investments. Any questions on this particular slide before I move on?
Sure, I'll ask the money, total money that came for all these projects. Was this all state money, or was this a bit of the FAA, I think ARPA money, or was it CARES? I can't remember, that came to us.
Right. Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I believe almost all of this money came through our FAA AIP program. But we can get some specifics if there were some other stimulus money involved in some of that, and I can get that back as a due out.
Thanks.
Any other questions before we move on? Okay, great. Next slide, please. Next slide you'll see, hopefully in front of you, is the Anchorage Municipality 2023 construction. A lot of projects going on in the Anchorage area this year. I'll just cover some of the highlights. We're really excited to kick off the final segment of the new Seward Highway O'Malley to Diamond project. That's going to continue that expansion of the new Seward Highway between Diamond and O'Malley. It'll include a diverging Diamond intersection interchange at O'Malley, and then a normal interchange reconfiguration at Diamond. Total cost estimated to about $113 million. On the engineer's estimate. Second project of note, we're going to be wrapping up this year the Dowling Road and Seward Highway Interchange project. We had a really good success this last year in getting those bridges, those old bridges removed and getting the new roundabouts updated. Those were the original roundabouts that we first had in the state years and years ago, and we've updated them significantly since then. Really pleased that that project has gone well. Our total tab on that was around $43 million. And again, we'll be just doing the final touches on that this year to wrap that project up. Final big project that we've got for highlighting in the Anchorage area is the O'Malley Road Reconstruction Phase 2. The original one took it from New Seward Highway up to Hillside, and this one will complete it from Birch to Hillside for this the second follow-on phase. Another $41 million worth of construction there to wrap up in 2023. Any other questions on the Anchorage slide before we move on?
Nope, go ahead.
Okay, great. Next slide, you're going to see Mat-Su area construction 2023. A lot of investment in the Mat-Su area these past few years. Of significance, we're really super excited to get this Kinnickoose Bay Road Phase 1 up and running. We did a little bit of utility relocates this last year before things started freezing up on us, and we got a little bit of construction done. But the bulk of the construction will happen for this first phase of KGB this next year. A lot of activity, super excited to turn that again, from a divided or from a two-lane road to a divided four-lane. It is one of the four safety corridors we have in the central region area, Parks Highways, KGB, Seward Highway, and Sterling. When we implement these divided four-lane highways, the safety corridor designation can be removed and provide for a lot safer operating conditions for our traveling public. So excited to get that out the door. $75 million for that first phase. And it'll be a two-year build out, 23-24 for the build out of phase one. And then we will be right on the heels with the second phase on out to Settlers Bay, in 25 and 26. So very excited to get those done. Second project, Seward Meridian Parkway. I know that's been a long awaited project by the borough. Excited to get that out the door. We run into a few stumbles with some cultural resource issues here this last year. So we were unable to get that 404 permit, but we've got all that locked down now. That'll be an estimated $60 million project. And continuing those improvements for phase two on Seward Meridian Parkway. Third project of note, we'll be kicking off this year will be the Glen Parks, Highway phase two, Parks Highway to Interspringer Loop. That's, as we're marching towards the fairgrounds there. We completed phase one up towards the Palmer end of that a few years ago. This will be the second phase that goes from the Parks Interchange on up to the state fairgrounds, again, a divided four lane. Lots of good improvements there, around $70 million worth of investment in the Math Valley as part of that project. So very excited to see that get out and get under construction as well. Any questions on the Mat-Su before I continue on?
So I do have one, Director Young. Of course, the Parks Highway is mostly in my district, at least until you get to Anderson. And the folks, Talkeetna especially, are intensely interested on Montana Sheep and Goose Creek bridges. And their question to me always with a little bit of exasperation is, when are those going to be finished?
I believe we're looking at a final construction build out by the end of 2023. There might be a few punch list items, seeding and erosion stabilization, bank stabilization stuff for 2024, but the bridges themselves should be completed in 2023.
Beautiful. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Any other questions? All right. Moving on to the final slide, Kenai Peninsula Borough. Again, a nice slate of projects we've got for the Kenai Peninsula area. Again, of note, our signature project, if you will, the Cooper Landing Bypass Project. We're moving through there year by year and continue to march forward. The final build-out is estimated at 2026, 2027, somewhere in there. We've got a new contractor on board this year, Quality Asphalt, and a joint venture with Taylor Brothers. We're going to be ordering the bridge steel this summer. Really excited about that. The bill has gone up a bit. We're at an estimated $690 million total for the project at this point. Phase 1A is under construction on the west end, creating Alaska's first wildlife overcrossing in the state. We haven't ever had one of those before, so that'll be a new thing for us. And we're getting through that in a really quick manner. So really happy to see that project progressing. Second item of note, we were able to complete the environmental permits and clearances for the Sterling Highway Safety Corridor. That would be the bridging between Sterling and Soldotna, that four-lane section. So we're actually pushing that out as a design build. Again, it's one of our safety corridors, so we're trying to put that at the top of the list when it comes to safety improvements in the region. We should have that out to bid this spring for the design build action on it. When I say design build, the actual design hasn't been quite completed yet. That's when we bring a contractor on board. Most of this year, you won't see a lot of dirt moving unless it's some minor utility relocations. But 2024, you'll see the preponderance of the construction activities really kick in. Excited to have that project moving out the door. I would ask to help us. This is kind of what we see as phase one of this project. There will be a follow-on phase that will involve access consolidation for further safety improvements. But we wanted to get it kicked off and moving with the divided four lane first so we can try to resolve the safety issues within that corridor. But there will be a follow-on project. We're really trying to communicate that to the stakeholders out there. I had a great meeting with Senator Bjorkman here last week that I think we were able to resolve a lot of conflict points. So good project. Estimated $77 million out the door for that safety corridor. So looking forward to that getting underway. The final one, the highlighted one for this one, Sterling Highway reconstruction 157 to 169. That's a rehabilitation of that area from Bayshore. I'm sorry, from Anchor River Bridges and North Anchor Fork Bridges. I'm sorry, North Fork Anchor River Bridges. 12 miles of the Sterling Highway. Estimated cost, $120 million. We're doing shoulder widening along that area, intersection improvements, lighting improvements. I hope that's going to be a really well-received project. We've done a lot of interaction with the community, and that's been a long-awaited project, too. So really excited to get that one out the door. Any questions on the Kenai projects I can answer?
Nope, doesn't appear like it.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate your time, and I will pass the baton on, I believe, to Northern Ranger Director Joe Kemp. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Director. So, Director Kemp, if you want to put yourself on record and go ahead with your presentation, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, my name is Joe Kemp. I'm the Acting Northern Region Director up here in Fairbanks. So, thank you for having me, guys. The first slide there that you'll see is an overview of the region. Same as what Central Region got going on. We got a lot of Western projects that we're doing, totaling somewhere around $150 million. There's several of them that haven't been advertised yet, so we'll see where those end up. But so a lot of work out there, mainly airport work. There is a couple of projects that are Kotzebue. Phase one of Cape Blossom Road down to the port is wrapping up this summer. They're doing most of the work will be done here in probably the next 2 months. And then they'll do punch list items come June. And I believe it's a June 30 completion date. So they'll be done with that. The phase two from Sadie Creek, which is about halfway down to the port, we have a big pad that's been left down there. We're going to build the road down to that pad. We'll start construction next summer, but we will have that project out for advertise here this next month, sometime in the next 28 days. So we're waiting to hear back from the federal government there on getting authority to go put that out. So, so a lot of work out west. As you can see, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, we had the Parks Highway blown up pretty good. We were doing a lot of projects on there. And, now we're trying to hit the Richardson Highway pretty heavy and, get a lot of those sections that with really narrow roads, you know, the road that's 26 feet wide, 24 foot wide with 2 inches of shoulder past the fog line kind of thing, and getting that improved so that it's meeting new highway standards and making sure that the roadways are safe. So we've been hitting that pretty hard. We have a couple more projects that are coming out on that one. Just for a quick breakdown of where the money's being spent, we're looking somewhere between $330 and $350 million spent in the northern region between AIP and FHWA projects. And about $150 million of that money is being spent out west. So there's a good portion of it being spent in western Alaska. If you go to the next slide there. This one will just show Fairbanks proper, a lot of projects going on. We're finishing up the last Lathbega University Avenue coming up here real soon. It's been several phases and sub-phases of those phases, and we're just about wrapping it up. But we had the bridge opening ceremony last summer, and that was great. A lot of delegates came up, and the governor, and they did a nice ribbon cutting for that. So we're getting that corridor finished up now, which is a big deal. It was a big chunk of work for us. So the other one that's going on right now in the Fairbanks area that's caught the eyes of a lot of people is the GARS intersection over the gap in the airport, Richardson Steese intersection, right by the military base, the main gate of the base. And that one's scheduled to be done sometime this fall, and probably have little punch list items going into next spring, potentially depending on the summer and how all the work goes for them. But HC contractors have been working pretty hard on getting that project done, and that'll be a nice one to have done. It'll improve. Right now we have there could be up to 6 minute wait times on that project or in that intersection, excuse me. And they're cutting it down to no more than about a minute and a half now. So it'll be significant time savings for people traveling through that corridor. And that's about all the projects that I have. It's going to be a banner year for us. We definitely, 49 projects around the region, quite a few projects that are the carryovers from last year. We did have two on the Alaska Highway from the previous slide there that, speaking to some supply chain issues there with culverts. There's hundreds of culverts on this project for 40 miles of Alaska Highway from the border north. And, we couldn't get it built last year because not all the culverts came in. Obviously you can't repave and rebuild and pave a road without replacing the culverts that you plan on replacing first. So that's making it so there's a few more projects with carryovers, but, contractors are getting the work done and they're doing a good job. So. Does anybody have any questions for me on that, on any of these projects?
I don't see any, Director. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Chair McCabe, if it's okay, I'd like to call Lance Mayer to come up and present on the South Coast Region projects.
Perfect. Thanks.
Good afternoon. I'm Lance Mayer, Regional Director, South Coast Region. So our first slide is kind of a region-wide look. We have projects scattered around. Our region spans southeast Alaska, jumps over Prince William Sound, Cook Inlet, picks up on the Alaska Peninsula, goes out to the Aleutians. So we have a project in Kodiak, a perimeter fence at the airport, equipment building in Cold Bay, and nav aids at St. Paul Island. And then in southeast Alaska, we have a project in Yakutat, another nav aid. Our ongoing project on the Haines Highway, it's mile points 12 through 20. And in Sitka, we have an intersection safety improvement project. Sorry. And a project on Sawmill Creek Road that we're just wrapping up some final touch-up punch list work, and then our ongoing Catlin Bay Road project. We have a couple projects on Prince Wales Island, the safety, guardrail safety improvement project, and Neck Lake Road. It's actually a large project that's being delivered by the Federal Highway Administration, Western Federal Lands. So they have designed and will do the construction. And so you won't see bids coming out from DOT and PF on that, just through Federal Highways. And then another safety improvement project in Wrangell, a rockfall project. I think that covered the projects on that slide.
Representative Vance.
Thank you. Through the chair, could you just touch on number 12, the FEMA emergency projects, and just describe what those entail?
Sure. I guess I don't have those located. So in December of 2019, there was a significant storm that hit southeast Alaska. And you might recall that there was a landslide in Haines that killed a couple people. That did damage all over southeast Alaska. So we have projects that we're putting out regularly to do the cleanup work on those. Apologize through the chair to Representative Vance. So we have projects in Petersburg and Juneau that we have, and Skagway that we have going out under the FEMA banner.
Oh, so does the most recent landslide in Juneau, does that involve FEMA funding in under DOT's management, or is that separate?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, are you referring to the one on North Douglas Highway?
I believe, well, that happened
a year
last
ago.
Last session, I was there. I was stuck on the other side of that.
Okay.
No, no, I'm speaking more recently. Wasn't there one downtown before session started? Do you know if that falls under DOT's purview?
Representative Vance, through the chair, that is not DOT infrastructure. That was City and Borough of Juneau. Okay. And there was some material that made its way all the way down to Main Street, Thane Road, but that was not a DOT and PF road that was primarily damaged.
All right, thank you.
Representative Mina.
I actually have the same question. Thank you.
Oh. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I'm looking at all these different areas, and I noticed that in the South Coast region, there's very few replacement of guardrails, and I would think that that would be a matter of public safety. Because I know that there are lots and lots and lots of guardrails that have been recalled and have been deemed to be a hazard to your health, literally, that are still in existence that need to be replaced, and I don't notice them on this list. Is there any anticipation of replacing some of those guardrails?
Yeah, for the record, Commissioner Anderson. Through the chair, Representative Stutz. Yeah, there are guardrails out there that are in the process of being replaced. It's aged infrastructure. They're things that we definitely want to keep improving on, because having things like guardrails that are in good condition is important. And so we are going through a process right now of inventorying. And so we understand what we have out there for guardrail, because this is 5,600 miles of roads, and there's a lot of guardrails along those roads. But we do recognize that, having that inventory is something that we can then, take a look at priorities and start allocating funding, based on that state of good repair and safety investment areas. So we are putting together a plan for that. That is in the works.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And my question involves the next slide. Are you going to get to Catlin Road? Go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to the guardrails. There was a corporate recall or guardrails that were declared unsafe. I remember seeing a national report and also a local report in Anchorage. And I believe the response of DOT is we don't have any of those in the state.
Yeah. Through the chair.
Is that accurate, or
Johnson?
Not inventory?
We do have some of those in the state. We've been going methodically through and replacing them as funding allows. And so that is something that we do as we go through on these projects, is to upgrade to the latest and the new. And so that's something we're doing, on all fronts when we go through a project on a project by project basis. We haven't had a comprehensive statewide guardrail program where we're replacing all the guardrails in the state. We wouldn't have the funding for that. So we have to prioritize and move forward with the current methodology. But the inventory piece, we do recognize there are some of those, the guardrail ends that have been discussed out there. But so we're working through that as we go. Yeah.
Thanks. So I know you have a Ketchikan area slide and then Catlin Bay, so I'm happy to wait until you get to the Catlin Bay slide if you'd like, but I would like to explore that a little bit.
Very well, Chair McCabe. I'll touch on these Juneau area projects. We have a pathway project that on Brotherhood Bridge Trail that's starting this summer. We have a safety project at Egan and Yandukan intersection. And looking quickly, the rest of those projects. Oh, Douglas Highway Stage 2 is a project that we'll be starting this summer. It's about an $11 million project. The rest of the projects on that list are ones that we're wrapping up construction from the prior year. Next slide. And we have quite a few projects going on in Ketchikan, the Wolf Point slope stability improvements is a CMGC project that that's a construction manager, general contractor, alternative procurement that we expect to see some work done this summer. We have a contractor selected already. The Project 24, Tongass Avenue Improvements, is a project that we hope to see construction in the fall of this year, that we've committed to the city of Ketchikan to only do work in the shoulder seasons around the tour operations, and so that project will start this year. Water Street Trestle Number 1 is another new start. That is an off-system project. It's a city bridge that we'll be replacing. And then the Stedman-Deermount Street intersection is another safety improvement project. Herring Cove and all of the work going on at the airport are carryover projects from previous years, and including Herring Cove Bridge. So now I'm ready to move to the next slide.
Okay.
So this is our ongoing Catlin Bay Road project. This project, we started construction in 2020. This project starts in Sitka at the end of Halibut Point Road and goes across Virgin Territory to the head of Catlin Bay, south of Sitka proper. This is a state-funded GO bond project and was in the 2012 bond package. The our engineer's estimate at the time we bid the project was $16 million. The bids came in at double our estimate. We went round and round determining whether we should proceed with the project. The decision was to use funding that was available in the bond projects that had been federalized. There was additional bond money available, and so that money was moved to Catlin Bay Road, and we started construction in 2020. The project was due to be complete this year in 2023, but it's been a really challenging project, and we won't get it done this year. Our plan is to get it done next year in 2024, and we expect that what we've currently scoped on the project to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $54 million at completion, and we've taken quite a few steps to limit cost. We've moved the alignment around both address safety issues. We did have an operator killed in a landslide on the project in its first season. So the contractor has been very safety conscious, and so we move alignments to reduce cost and improve safety, both the contractor and then the stability of the road going forward in the future. Some of the things have driven the additional cost, the amount of overburden that we encountered on the project. Well, first, this was a project along the side of a mountain, very hard to access. We didn't do the full geotechnical explorations that we would maybe do on a highway along flat ground and on closer to the water. And so we made a lot of estimates. We hopped around from places that we could get to, and those estimates proved to be not very accurate. And so we had a lot of extra overburden, which required us to have additional waste areas. So we would have to get modifications to permits we had for waste area. We had to work with the landowners, primarily the Forest Service and the Sciatica Corporation, who've been very cooperative to purchase or make arrangements for extra land for waste areas. And it's just been a really challenging project.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. I have a question. Where is this road from and to, and how many people is it going to service?
This road is at, if you're familiar with Sitka, it's the start of this new construction. This route is about a mile past the ferry terminal. So it's south of town, and it is a corridor that has been established for a long time, and at one point in an earlier Southeast plan, there was plans to build a ferry terminal at Rodman Bay. This road would have been part of the way to Rodman Bay so that ferries wouldn't have to go through Peril Straits. And since then, our plans have changed, but this road was in the bond, and decisions were to move ahead with this. Accesses recreation. It's not going to be a highly traveled road, so berry picking, hunting. It does access Sciatica lands. They may have resource development that they plan to do, and then it gets to public land, forest service land at the end of the road. It's 9 miles of construction, so it's a recreation road.
Follow up.
Yes.
Please, Mr. Chair, just so I'm getting this clear in my mind, so this is not going to give people access to their residence or any shopping, or it's going to be kind of like a, hey, you want to go, like you said, pick some berries, and we can travel on this road? Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, that is the case. Yes.
For $70 million almost? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any questions? So I have a couple questions. It's $70 million because we had to take the most difficult route, if I'm not mistaken. The environmentalists drove us up onto the hillside instead of going around the bay like we normally would. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, Chair McCabe, that there certainly were environmental considerations. But this route was laid out, planned to be the most feasible and low cost way to get there, and so traveling along the beach line would have made the road longer, so we're skipping over points of land, and it's I
Thanks. I've had a few pictures sent to me, and it looks to me like one of those roads in China where the bus drives around the road with the wheels this far from the edge. So maybe that guardrail thing is important. So I appreciate the update. I know it's difficult. I know DOT is probably wishing they had never started it. In fact, I think last year, or maybe it was the year before, they said whoever was testifying said it was the most difficult project DOT had ever done. And contractors are having issues. And as you said, there have been some contractor, or at least one contractor, that lost his life on that road. So difficult road for sure. And I appreciate the update and the sort of difficult conversation. So. Anyone else? One more.
I through the chair, I'm just wondering, did DOT do a cost-benefit analysis on this project? Being as it's such a difficult project, it appears that the cost has doubled from the original contract, and there was loss of life involved. And being as it's not at face value providing economic value and access for communities, I just wonder how the decision was come to continue this project. Is that something that you, when you look at the difficulty of something, is there a cost-benefit analysis conducted?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Vance. This project started as a GO bond with the direction to DOT to build a road, the Catlin Bay Road, and so that's where we began. No, I don't believe there was a cost-benefit analysis conducted. A lot of times, depending on the project, you know, we typically, you know, take our direction and we move forward. That's at DOT what we do. I would just say, you know, I think we recognize this is a tough project. We recognize that, yeah, you know, we could have done better in some respects on this one. I do think that it's important that we look at how to finish this economically, and so that we don't have a partial road in Alaska. You know, that's the piece that I worry about, that we don't complete something that we started. And so I am hoping we can do that. And again, I think Director Merrick did mention that there was planning. You know, the 2004 Southeast Plan does identify this corridor, and this was the start. I think if you look at also like the Cake Road, you know, that had this corridor to Petersburg. We didn't get to Petersburg. We got a fair amount with the funding that was available. And we may find that as a challenge for us in the future, where, you know, we're allocating a certain amount of funds to these kind of projects for expansion, for, you know, but hopefully community development. You know, as communities grow, we have these housing challenges. People need areas to expand. These roads, you know, roads do serve that purpose. And but yeah, with the funds that a lot of times are allocated, you know, the costs, when projects stretch on for this long, the costs go up. And one thing I would like to focus on is getting these projects done quick. I think if you look at something like Cake, we got it done quick, and we made that work. We you know, and so this one is taking a while, and I think that's part of the piece that drives the costs up.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair. And just because I'm not clear in my own mind through the chair, Director Merrick, when you were talking, you said, well, this road will get us there. What is there? What's going to be at the end of this road?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, it just accesses recreation lands,
nothing.
Public land.
Is that right?
at the end of the road.
So really nothing's there. I mean, there's no development of any kind. The road's just going to stop. Is that correct? Through the chair.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Stutz. At this point, yes, it's a new road to...
70 million bucks will go a long way in the marine highway system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So at some point, Director Merrigan, there you said it was halfway to the bay where they were going to put the, maybe not halfway. Okay, so, but they were going to put the bay on the other side of the, or the ferry terminal on the other side of the island, right? And this was considered in 2012 to be the start of that road to the other side? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah, 2012 is a long time. I get it. And Commissioner, I appreciate your idea that we should finish projects that we start. I just wish all state entities could follow that thought process.
I have one more.
One more from Representative Vance.
Thank you. Through the chair, I don't mean to belabor this, but you mentioned that this was funded by geobonds. I'm unfamiliar with that at the moment. So could you just briefly describe that in relation to, you know, general funds and just how that's funded?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance. Yeah, there was a geobond package in 2012. That was packaged up. It was a package of funding, a bonded project, or proposed bonded projects that went out to the voters. Folks voted on it, and then it came forward, and then DOT, at that time, I think that was the last big one we've had. And then, you know, there's a list of projects with funding that you know, the state goes out and purchases bonds for.
Follow up?
Sure.
So this is essentially going to be general funds.
Through the chair, Representative Vance. Well, at this time, we wouldn't have authorization just to spend from the general fund. So when we see the increases here that are proposed, DOT would either look at unexpended geobond funds from that 2012 package as a way to finish this project, or, you know, we'd have to look at other options that we have through other appropriations that exist that the scope would fall within this work. So it wouldn't just be general funds, no.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. That was fun. Let's move along.
Okay, thank you, Director. For the record, Ryan Anderson, Commissioner of DOT. Chair McCabe, and so, you know, we just went through this discussion, and you know, one thing at DOT, we're a can-do organization. We're out there doing. And, you know, we make mistakes. We all admit to that. We need to learn from them, and we need to move forward. And that actually is a great segue to the next series of slides, where we just really wanted to talk through some of our challenges out there and how we're approaching them. And, you know, and this thing about, hey, let's learn from these things and keep moving. Because if we think that's something that isn't a one-time thing, that's something that we have to keep doing and have that attitude as we move forward, because the challenges these days just keep coming at us. So with that, I will run through these. The first big challenge that we have right now, safety, of course, is a top priority of DOT. We had 81 fatalities, highway fatalities, this past year in 2022. And that was a high year for us. I mean, if you look at the past 10 years, it was one of the top two or three fatality years for us. So that concerns us, and we want to make sure we're focused on that. Over the past few years, the average of pedestrian fatalities that are associated with those, it's been around 20%, which is a high number for Alaska as well. So 20% of those fatalities that we see relate to pedestrians. This past year, the number was that I can recall was 12 pedestrian fatalities in 2022. So what do we do? How do we address safety at DOT when we're working on these things? Well, you know, the safety corridors, of course, you know, we have in Alaska, that has been a successful program. This chart that you see, the bottom red line is our fatality rate in Alaska over time. It goes all the way back to 1981. The blue line is our serious injury rate, and then the green line is the combination of the fatal and serious injury rates. And when we look at these rates, you know, a serious crash rate per 100 million vehicles miles traveled. And so it's a nationwide look, you know, it's a standard measure for us to use. You can see in 2006, the legislature implemented a statute that allowed us to establish safety corridors. And that allowed us to have the double fines if you're driving and you're not obeying the laws. And then also we were able to, in 2009, we had federal funding that allowed us to begin a Bureau of Highway Patrol program where we could fund the troopers to be out there in these safety corridors doing that additional enforcement. You can see when we initiated those, we saw a decline in the serious injuries and fatality rates. Now, since then, the Bureau of Highway Patrol positions, we went through a time period under the FAST Act where that wasn't an eligible federal expense anymore, and so we couldn't fund it. And so that program went away. But now with the new Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, those funds are eligible, that activity is eligible again. And so we are talking with the Department of Public Safety about re-engaging with that program just because we are seeing this trend now that's going up. And so we want to use those tools as a success, you know, as a story that of something that works in Alaska just to improve safety.
Representative Mina.
Thank you. Through the chair, are there any theories for why the fatality trend is going up?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, that it's interesting. You know, nationwide, it's been going up, and they have. I mean, a lot of distracted driving is really big now. Driving under the influence is another one. I think those are two of the big ones. But there hasn't been any definitive study that said, hey, this is why these things have been going up recently at this point. So it's something that's still in the works in the National Highway Safety Administration. They're looking at these things, and hopefully we'll get some information out of them soon. Yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Measure of life is important. It's also a measure of property loss. Do you do anything similar to this? And I have an example in my district where a roundabout ended up being funded by the feds because it turned out to be the highest property loss intersection in the city. Not a life was lost, but the property loss was just huge. And so do you do any kind of comparison with property loss, or is it just fatalities?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes, we can provide that information. We do have that as well in a similar kind of understanding where we're tracking property losses along with serious and fatals.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would that come in a form like this, or would it be more specific to a community or an intersection or a corridor? I mean, this is, I understand what this is, but mm-hmm. we're talking about, you know, property loss, that's a little different, more deeper drill in and more specific to a specific location as opposed to a statewide. So how would that data come, or how would that information come to us?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Johnson, we do have reporting, and maybe we could start with that, some of just our past kind of standard reporting on that. One thing is when these accidents happen or these crashes happen, you know, the troopers or the municipalities, the police reports are generated, and it takes some time for those reports to get into these systems where then, you know, they get to DOT and we report out. So it'll be a little bit delayed. It won't be, you know, this year or anything like that, but we can definitely provide those reports for you to see what we have, and then we're happy to look at things in more detail if that's the request.
Thanks. So I have one question, Commissioner. So I'm interested to know, you said like KGB, the safety corridor, once that's done, that safety corridor will be vanished, so to speak. How many safety corridors as a state are we allowed, and are we actively looking for other safety corridors to sort of access the federal BHP money, should it be there? I guess you said it's in the IJA fund, so are we looking for other places we can use safety corridors?
Yeah, Chairman Cade, could I go to the next slide for
sure.
This answer? Yes, so we have four active safety corridors right now, the KGB Road, of course, the Parks Highway through Wasilla there. We're actually in the process of decommissioning that safety corridor right now. So that's a success for Alaska. The Sterling Highway, Sterling Soldotna, as Director Young mentioned. And then we have the Seward Highway, which is a big focus for us right now, from Potter's Marsh to Girdwood. That's probably the next big challenge for Alaska on safety corridors we're going to work forward. We have been talking internally about safety corridors and where we go next. The pedestrian concerns is one where we would like to look at. It's a little different than a standard, you know, safety corridor and whatnot. So we do have our safety folks taking a hard look at that and trying to figure out, okay, how is there something we need to do there to put a focus there? And is it some type of corridor in an urban area? And so we are looking at those things. We haven't established anything yet.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Representative Gray, you haven't spoken all meeting, so take a shot.
Well, because I through the chair, I believe that there has been some discussion of making a safety corridor on Tudor, because we do have the pedestrian deaths happening there. I don't know enough, and maybe you can shed light on what the parameters are for a safety corridor. And also, maybe you know off the top of your head if just lowering the speed limit would result in less pedestrian deaths.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Gray. When we look at the safety corridors, we're looking at those serious injury fatality rates and where those are elevated and how they relate to the rest of the state and national. So we're really kind of looking at it from that broad perspective. When it comes to what was the second part of your question, sir?
Oh, if just lowering the speed limit would result in less pedestrian deaths.
Yeah, so there are some things we do. I mean, for traffic calming, as that is something that that's more of designing a road to try to bring people to lower their speeds. Our experience in some of the studies that we look at, just lowering a speed limit doesn't mean that people are going to drive that speed limit if the road is that kind of highway. And so we haven't seen that just lowering the speed limit, unless, you have that enforcement capability, was what it would take. So we trend away from just changing the sign to a lower speed limit to trying some other more engineered solutions.
Representative Mina.
Thank you. Through the chair, how does the funding for the safety corridors work? Is it part DOT and then the federal receipts? And then do you know how the funding has changed over the past couple of years?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, that's a great question. So the safety corridor projects that we have now are pretty much 90% funded by the federal government for the infrastructure improvements. As we move forward with the Bureau of Highway Patrol, there's a highway safety improvement program that's funded through the federal government that would fund those types of things. So it's primarily federal receipts. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Vance.
Through the chair, I am highly interested in a regional look at the fatalities. It feels like we had an increase in fatalities on the peninsula, especially the lower peninsula in my district. It seemed highly unusual. And if you could get that information to us, one of the things that I would like to partner with DOT about is the education campaigns. I think if the public generally knew how many people have died on our roads recently, and we were able to talk about that in ways that they can help reduce that by just being aware, being a respectful driver, those types of things, that would improve it. But just that sheer reality of the number of people who have lost their life. I don't know how many of us here at the table are a part of the Facebook pages that are acting as those extra eyes and ears while you're upgrading your technology. Those have a powerful impact in communication of what's really happening. And we just tend to have a little snapshot of our community, and we wonder. So if you could get that to us, and if possible, be as specific as you can, to our regions, then we can help be that voice in the education campaign for you as well. But we just need to know the data and be able to help in that conversation, because, as you know, I've been asking a lot of these questions just this year. I've had a lot of requests for reduced speed limits all throughout my district. They're looking at different design options. They're looking at different ways that pedestrians can have safer access, and trying to get ahead of the conversation while you have projects out for public comment. And I think that's part of the education that we need as well, is how can the public who have these concerns engage with DOT when we're looking at these safety corridors or any projects that are coming out, in their design phase, how the public can make sure that they are working with you before things get going too far. Because I think the public in general has the same concerns, but we need to kind of connect the data of what's really happening and the public perception to what we can do to work with you to kind of bring the whole puzzle together.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance. Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Yeah, we can provide that information, and education campaigns are something we're working actively on, and it would be great to engage.
Thank you.
So thanks, Commissioner. I'd be interested to know what we can spend money on. So you said it's 90% federally funded, the safety corridors in a lot of those. So maybe overhead crosswalks over Tudor Road would be helpful, or straightening out the sewer or the highway along the Turnagain there, going to Seward by running through a couple of small tunnels. I've seen something like that. You know, is that possible to get federal funds for, or is that a reach too far?
Yeah, Chair McCabe. No, these are things that we're actively looking on. So, for example, for the Seward Highway project, I mean, we're going to evaluate tunnels as one of the options, and that just, you know, is something we need to do. When it comes to things like Tudor Road, I think even Ingrid Gamble, these places, we're looking hard at how do you improve the situation for pedestrians, and what does that mean while we're also balancing the traffic needs. So we're always in the vehicle traffic needs. There's a lot of look, you know, there's a lot of talk right now. Some states do a thing called complete streets where they go through this analysis to make sure they're accommodating all users. We're working through that and what that could look like for us. You know, some things are pretty straightforward. You know, I think in some places we'd be driving around and there's power line poles still in the middle of the sidewalks. Okay, those are federally eligible things that we can do with a project to get those things relocated as part of a project to improve the roadway. We just have to have that transportation tie, and I think there's a lot right now. And if you read through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, there's a big focus on these types of improvements right now. So there's a lot we could do.
Thanks. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question. So we're talking about, you know, the traffic and pedestrians. Do you have many issues with bicyclists?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutes. Yeah, that absolutely. You know, it's vulnerable road users is what it is, and it's pedestrians, it's bicyclists. I believe that even motorcyclists are considered vulnerable. But this is something that we're working on. We're actually working through a potential vulnerable road users plan where we would just have that as a focus area when you look at transportation improvements and how you would improve things. So, yeah, these are all things that we need to pay attention to for sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. On we go, Commissioner. Thanks.
Okay. The next slide, West Coast Alaska and the storm response said, Typhoon Mirbok was a big event for us. It struck a broad area of Alaska on the West Coast. It was a multiple-day storm event. It impacted over hundreds of miles. North and south sea level rise of 8 to 18 feet. This was something that, you know, I think really stretched a lot of agencies pretty thin. It was something that we all recognized it was important to respond to, and so we did. But it did call out a way that, hey, when we have these big events, it's an all hands on deck. And, you know, the governor went out there. I was on several of the trips, and it was really that, hey, whoever has resources right now, we all got to work past even our own agency normal priorities to utilize our resources to make sure the health and safety of people is cared for. For this particular event, you know, we had a lot of good things that went on. I mean, nobody was killed. This event, it was more of a property damage event. You'll see, you know, there was houses floating. I was in Gullivan right after the event. There were houses that were moved off their foundations. There were people that had feet of sand in the bottom floor of their houses. I remember in Elam, the roads were completely obliterated that were along the shore. When we were flying along Nome Council, you couldn't even tell that there was a road along the beach anymore. It just looked like a beach again. And so it was really a pretty devastating event for the region. But the way everyone came together between, you know, the communities and the local governments, the state agencies, the contractors out there, we really took that team approach and got the partnerships together. And we had a deadline because winter was really coming. But we did it. You know, we were able to go through and get the transportation infrastructure back into shape, so we'll get them through the winter. And then even DOT ended up working on housing projects because everyone recognized we had the contractors in the area they had things where insulation was frozen because it was soaked up 4 feet in their houses, and you know, the winter's coming. So we had a lot out there, but it was really a good story. And one of the things that we were able to do to make that happen was really consolidating information using technology when we're out in the field, making sure the damage assessments are coming in and we're getting them centralized and people know what's going on. That was a big part of that. And so it was a pretty neat way for us to show that, hey, we could do these things. You know, we got to take a little different approach. We got to think differently. But these are the results. So we still have a lot of work to do out there. And I think over the next probably 2 years, you know, DOT will have a lot of work. I'm out in the Nome region. And then, you know, there was 36 damaged communities on this, but I think it was over 50 declared. And so that's all still getting worked on.
Representative Mina.
Thank you. Through the chair, this might go into a potential presentation related to resiliency, but I'm wondering if DOT is working on best practices from Typhoon Mirbok and using that to strategize on, you know, future potential disasters.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, you know, yeah, absolutely. One thing we're doing is more training in the incident command system. So we want to make sure when there's an emergency, there's a way that people, the military and folks respond through ICS. And we want to make sure we understand that and we're trained in it. And so when we go out there to work, we're working with them. Okay, we all are on the same page. Another thing is to make sure, you know, when we have this opportunity with technology, one thing that was apparent to me when we went out was the cell phone service, the cell phones were up right away. However, they did that. So you had access. You could transmit data. You could do these things. We just needed the frameworks to be able to have these sharing abilities on that front. So we're doing more with that. And then also just to make sure that, you know, we're ready. We have kind of the go teams that when these things happen, everybody knows what to do. And it's all been worked out ahead of time. So.
Thanks, Commissioner. Please continue.
Okay, another big risk area right now for us, of course, is winter maintenance. I think Representative McKay talked about the snow plowing in Anchorage is a challenge, and that there's a lot of snow in Anchorage. We have seen an increasing frequency of extreme events. I think last year there was actually more declared emergencies than any other year. And DOT, you know, we're out there. I mean, whether it's these landslides across the road, I mean, the other for us, it's every week. You know, we're dealing with something. I think last week there was this avalanche on the Tolk Highway. That's, you know, there's always things, and we want to be the agency that can go out there and that avalanche happens, and hey, 3 or 4 hours, roads open, we're moving again. That's how we want to be. But we do have these challenges with these vacancies and the shortage of qualified workers, supply chain right now. You know, when we're looking for equipment, it takes a while to get a snowplow truck, you know, and it takes a while to get these things. So we have to factor that in, and then of course, you know, overall, you know, we're pretty resource constrained. But we are doing some things on partnering local government. We're working a lot more with local governments, really trying to make sure that if there's opportunities to do things that make sense, that we're doing it. We're doing on the workforce development. We're trying some things out for the future. We're, for example, on these commercial driver's licenses, we have a scholarship program. And so if we have people, and they don't have to be working for DOT, it can be others too, but if they can show that, you know, they have a job, they can get a job that requires a CDL and they have that commitment from an employer or a promotion because they have a CDL, we can actually provide a scholarship so they can go to the training and do that. I didn't actually realize how expensive commercial driver's license training is, but it's $15,000 to $20,000 for a person to get a commercial driver's license anymore. So those types of things, you know, we need those people as our equipment operators, so we're trying to think ahead on that front. Recruitment retention is big for us. Like these flexible work schedules seem to be working. The mission critical incentive pay is something, another tool we have. It's not ideal, but it's something that we do when we have to. And then we also are doing more with the use of contracts, whether it's for emergency response or when we just can't provide that level of service that people are used to because of staffing shortages, those types of things. And so, you know, we're working on that pretty much all the time.
Representative Mina.
Thank you. Through the chair, a quick question related to plowing. And so I echo the concerns of Representative McKay on snow plowing in Anchorage, but sidewalk plowing was a very huge issue for pedestrians. And I know that's very much a Muni and state DOT coordinated effort. One issue that I heard was that DOT had two sidewalk plows, and during the snowstorm in Anchorage, both of those plows were out of service, and so that resulted in a lot of frustrations for pedestrians. And so I know that there's a lot of limited resources for those operations, but are things like sidewalk plows being adequately addressed with the current funding that you have?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina. Yeah, the sidewalk pieces, so typically how, you know, DOT has a prioritization system, and, you know, we go through on priority to hit the roads, and then we hit the pedestrian facilities. There is a lot of discussion right now about that prioritization system, and is it the right priorities, and we're going through a process to kind of revisit all that. When it comes to equipment, yeah, we do have breakdowns. We try to work through that the best we can. I mean, there is a mechanics is another issue for us, and that can sometimes factor into some of these extended breakdowns. But we do, you know, recognize that we got to keep those sidewalks plowed, and we're going to keep doing our best.
Yeah. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, two quick questions. About the contracting out, and I'm just going to use some very round and not terribly accurate numbers, but in Anchorage, the Muni was paying about $20 an hour to drivers, and we didn't have enough, and so we contracted out, and the contract fee was about $40 an hour. And so I feel like, you know, hindsight is 2020. Maybe if we'd raised those wages to $30 an hour, we would have saved some money. So I wonder if maybe, you know, if we're having to contract out, if there might be some way that the state could make it so we didn't have to contract out. That's one thing. And the second thing is this has been brought to my attention, just a question about the municipality of Anchorage, a possibility of us taking over the snow plowing of all our roads, and not, like, if there's a way for us to own the roads within Anchorage so that we don't have this issue of, well, the Muni plows these three roads, but the main road has to be plowed by the state. And if the state's not there, and the same thing with our sidewalks, you know, we had issues in my district of children trying to walk to school, but not having a sidewalk accessible by a state road, while all the other sidewalks were okay. And you know, that we were waiting around for the state to plow that sidewalk. Is there any mechanism or way for Anchorage to just do all their own plowing?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Gray. In regards to contracting out and the wages piece, there is a wage study that's the local trades and crafts union that does the snow plowing. And so that wage study is supposed to happen starting this year. So that's the first, and that would be a labor relations piece. You know, DOT doesn't set the rates on that. For the municipality of Anchorage and the sharing, you know, DOT as an organization, you know, what makes sense to us is if we were on the main lines. I mean, I think that's what DOT is good at when you're out on the major highway system. If we have those opportunities to do trades or whatever it takes to have local municipalities or local governments, you know, work on the smaller roads, we're all for it. I think those are good things for us to kind of be working towards. How that works out in the meantime, I know there's a lot of agreements, in particular in Anchorage, where, you know, it may be a state DOT road, but the Muni has agreed because for efficiency wise, it just made sense. And so we do have those out there, but it's not as you're saying, where it would be just that, yeah, the Muni would be encompassing. So we would be open to those ideas.
Follow up. Sure. I mean, I'm glad to hear that. I'll just say that in my district in particular, they're not major highways that, you know, Tudor, Boniface, Muldoon, you know, they're state roads that we could probably plow. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, are upgrade and trade still talked about?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Johnson. The paving trades?
Yes. Types?
Yeah, we actually are. And I think there's actually one in Kodiak, Otmaloy Way that we're working through. And so once that, we have an agreement that once that project is designed and built, then the local government takes it on. So yeah, those are still things we're interested in, and so if those are out there, we want to hear about them.
Are we still running into difficulty with standards, that the municipality wants to hold higher standards than the actual state standards, and that's been a hurdle to actually doing these, because they won't take the road unless it's upgraded beyond what the state authorizes or federal government authorizes? They want to, they'll take a Cadillac model and trade, but they won't take a Chevy and trade, I guess, for lack of a better term. So has that arisen lately?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Johnson. No, typically what I hear is that the state is building the Cadillac and then others are, and but no, I haven't heard that one. But there is that, typically, you know, when folks want to take on a new road, they do want a good road so they don't inherit a maintenance burden. And we understand that. And so that would always be the focus there.
Sure. Actually, a statement. How many of those roads would you like to have a list of?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, all of them.
Thank you.
So I have maybe one clarifying question. Mm-hmm. In this, you said, the Representative Johnson said trades, and you said trades, and so maybe you could go through a little bit with us about what trades means. So if you were to, you would you just give all the state roads in Anchorage to maintain, or would there have to be some sort of trade deal made so that you keep federal funding and that sort of thing?
Yeah, through the chair, Chair McCabe, the ones I have experience with are typically, you know, for us to give up a roadway and take off that maintenance burden, a local government is looking for something to trade. Not to say that's a requirement. So if there was a rural road out there that DOT was maintaining and someone wanted to step up and say, oh no, we want to take on the maintenance of that road, I think you would see that DOT is very willing to do that. So that I would just leave it at that.
Huh. I might know of a road.
Chair McCabe, we have to have a maintenance agreement too. If there's federal funds in place, we do have to have that assurance that it will be maintained. So I just say that.
Mr. Chairman, and I hope not to speak out of terms. The trade is that we upgrade the road to a certain standard, and then they trade the maintenance for perpetuity for that road, and they actually own it. So there's not actually, you give us a road here and we take a road over there. It's not horse trading, it's road trading.
Thanks.
Okay. Just to continue on real quickly, one other big risk for us, and we've heard about it a lot, is DOT and community engagement and how well of a job we're doing at that. We all know Alaska has a lot of rural, unorganized areas, and it can be difficult sometimes to, you know, understand the priorities and what's going on, especially the rural areas. They're very multimodal, and our funding systems aren't. So we'll have highways funding, we'll have aviation funding, we may have marine highways programs, and they're all in different baskets of funds, I guess is how I would say it. And so this becomes a challenge when we go out to work in rural areas, because we may have highway folks go out and they don't know necessarily what the aviation folks have going on. And you know, we lose efficiencies, there might be opportunities out there. And so we've really been trying to look forward and come up with ways that bringing these areas together where there could be one group that's really looking at that whole multimodal transportation system and providing advice to DOT and recommendations. And what we've started looking at was a lower 48 model. They called it the Rural Transportation Planning Organizations, and it's kind of like a smaller municipal planning organization like the Anchorage has or Fairbanks has, but it's light. It's not as onerous with the requirements and what you have to do there. And so we started offering this up as a voluntary. If a local community was interested in this and they wanted to champion it and move forward, DOT would provide some funding for planning, and then we'd provide, you know, a person that would be a transportation, some expertise, and to see what happens. And we had some takers. And so we started out with this Copper Valley Development Association. They're an Ardor down in the Copper Valley, and they really stepped up and said, hey, we think this is important for us. We want to be able to tell DOT what our priorities are, what the transportation, what needs to happen here. And so we want to form this committee. And they took it upon themselves to form a board. And now we are working with them on transportation planning. And they're starting to, we're giving them the presentations of what's going on in the region. And they're looking at it and giving us feedback on what they think should happen. So that one's been pretty neat. And it's pretty early. This is just in the past few months. The Fairbanks North Star Borough, as part of their fast planning MPO, they wanted to expand that to reach the outlying areas beyond what a normal MPO would be able to do. And so we just signed that on Friday so they can go forward with that. And these are pilot programs, so we're not dealing with, you know, we're keeping everything as cooperative agreements. So we're trying things out to see if this is something we want to institutionalize later. And then the Northwest Arctic Borough has stepped, they're pretty much have their agreements written. And we're working on a signing date for them to implement a rural planning organization up there as well. And then we've heard some interest down by the Bristol Bay down there. And then a Southeast Conference has talked to us about Southeast Alaska as well, kind of in the formation stages. So new program, just a better way to get more local input on our planning processes.
So are people reaching out to cities and areas reaching out to you, or are you reaching out to them and offering them availability?
Yeah, Chair McCabe. So when we started this, I was just, every chance I got when I was up in front of a group of people, I asked if anybody was interested. And that got some interest going. And now I think the planning networks in the state are talking more and more about it. And so it's starting to be more of a, you know, the networks are coming together. So, but it would definitely be something. We have a program development group with Director James Marks. And those are the folks that are leading on this, with making sure if someone's interested, you know, there's some funding available and they can help them structure. And then now we've got some examples we can show people too on how it works.
Perfect. I know somebody that's interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone else? Okay.
Okay. And then the last couple slides here are on the Alaska Marine Highway System. Of course, you know, on the overview scale, you know, we have the aging vessels that get tough. They're more expensive. They end up longer in the shipyard because there's more unexpected problems as we open things up, and that impacts our schedule and budgets. It also means, you know, changes in schedules. You know, the schedules that we publish, for example, this year it's taken us longer to get us out of schedule because we had some unanticipated impacts with the Matanuska, and that caused us to rethink how we were going to do things, you know, as now we've got the Columbia heading out here on the 14th, I believe. So those are all, with these aging vessels, we run into these things more and more. And you know, I believe there's going to be an AMHS-focused presentation for this committee here next week, potentially. And they're going to go into detail on these things to show you all the ships and what we see and those types of things. So that's a big challenge for us. The other big challenge for us right now is crewing. And it is tough. You know, we've got the three marine unions. We've been doing a lot of vessel visits over the past 2 months, really trying to get on the ships, talk to people. What do they think? You know, what can we do to try to retain and recruit people? And so we've got some ideas that we're moving forward, and we're being aggressive. You know, we've done a lot more on the recruiting side with the outreach and using social media and every tool that we can find there. We've got the $5,000 bonus for people that start with the Marine Highway System. And then we're looking at things on the retention side to really try to make sure we're not losing as many people as we hire. So that's a big challenge for us. One of the things that we're doing more of, we have this Charting the Course initiative where you can find more information, you know, making sure that the public has that opportunity to see the challenges, but also hear from us more. And so we're working through that. We did do an operational audit that's just now getting finalized, should be, I think, towards the end of the month, which is really having an external expertise come in and really take a look at the system as a whole and give us advice on what they think, where we could make improvements. We're doing a pretty hefty review of our maintenance and overhaul packages. We got the ACFs, the Hubbard is coming out of the shipyard. It got the crew quarters on it, so now we can go longer and farther with that ship. And our goal is to have that run in May 1 and on the schedule so we can make the most of those younger ships. But of course, the big news is the discretionary grant awards the past week, and that's the $285 million to go towards, you know, capital infrastructure as well as operations, and to really, you know, make the smart decisions and investments there so we can, you know, move this system forward here. And the focus for us is reliability and modernization. I think if we can stay focused on those two things, that's where we want to be here. And by the time we get done with this, the rural ferry programs and those things. So a lot of good happening there, but a lot of challenges too. And I recognize that, and we're working hard on it.
Representative Stutz, I didn't even have to look at you, and I knew you'd have a question.
Sorry, I do. And I'm not going to get too far in the weeds because I'm grateful to hear, Mr. Chair, that we're going to have a marine highway system. But the legislature last year forward-funded the marine highway system specifically so they could get the scheduling out earlier. And I'm curious as to why the summer schedule has not been released yet. Now, I appreciate the fact that, you know, there's been some issues on the different vessels, but not to the degree that the scheduling shouldn't have been out by now.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutz. Yeah, I mean, that is definitely top priority now, is to get the schedule out. You know, with the Columbia running, that changed some things. I know with Prince Rupert is one that we heard a lot about with the public that we're trying to work out. But, yeah, we're working on it. We're going to get out as soon as possible. We did get a request to extend the public comment period, and so we did honor that request. And so once that public comment period's up, you know, that schedule will get turned really quick.
Quick follow-up.
Sure.
I know that it's a very difficult job. I wouldn't want your job. I hear you. You've got all these things. But the reason for the request for the extension of the public comment was because the information came out 3 days before the public comment was supposed to conclude. So, you know, there's kind of a check and balance here. And so I'm just concerned because this is why the legislature forward funded the marine highway system, so these things could be addressed. Again, I know you had a lot of extra things that you weren't anticipating, like a big storm up in the north, but I am just wanting to get it out there so you know that we're watching. Thank you.
Representative Gray.
Really quick, through the chair, thank you. What do you think is the main reason why it's difficult to hire crew and retain crew and keep staffing levels up? That's all. Thanks.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Gray. Well, it's a nationwide problem. We did conclude our labor negotiation agreements last year, and so those are fairly recently negotiated agreements. But we are competing, you know, nationwide. And nationwide, we talked to Washington State Ferries, the British Columbia, those folks as well. Everyone's struggling just finding mariners. And so we've heard it even from the private sector that this is a tough thing. And so it appears to be something bigger than just, you know, a wage issue or whatnot. We keep thinking about what can we do to improve the experiences. And one thing we're looking at is things like Wi-Fi on the ships. For the crews, just because it seems that, you know, the younger people, they have different things they want anymore. And so we need to figure that out and keep working towards it. So, yeah, it's not an easy one, but, yeah.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're always so kind in indulging me. Just one last thing. I just want to say how much I appreciate you working with the Marine pilots in addressing their issues. That's huge. That's huge for the state. It's huge for the Marine pilots. And so I didn't want to be a naysayer totally. Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. Because there's been gaps in service with the vessels needing to be on dry dock, I know that you've been looking at contracting to be able to at least get goods to the smaller communities like mine in Soldovia. Have you had success in filling those contracts during this winter season?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance. it varies. And so, you know, we did, for Soldovia in particular, we did put out a contract and nobody bid on that one, which was unfortunate. We did put out some contracts in the Kodiak area and we did get bidders on that. And so we worked through that. Northland Canal, we've been successful with bids in that area. So we're continuing this. It's a campaign really that when we recognize there's these gaps in services, we're moving forward with the solicitations and then we're learning from those whether we need to work harder in an area to find people. And what we are hoping is becomes, and you know, right now it is a normal thing for us to do just because of the overhauls and the crewing situations. And so that hopefully more and more folks will see that and maybe move some services in the area if they can expect it. So we're working through that and we have been talking to a fair amount of these folks out there doing the job on the contractors to see if what we can do to get their interest.
Follow up?
Sure.
So specifically, is the bid still open for Soldovia? And what's the solution in the meantime?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance. I'll have to get back to you on the bid for Soldovia, and we can get back with you on a solution, too.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Commissioner Anderson. I appreciate it. I have to tell you, I rode the Kennecott from Whittier all the way to Juneau, and I know it's in dry dock, and that mattress in A53, bottom bunk. No. It was a great experience. We didn't have too many people on board, but your crew was awesome, and I appreciate the – and, of course, it was nice and smooth, so it was a real good time. And Representative Gray was with us, and I appreciate your crew and their professionalism, frankly. So with that, if there's no other business and no other questions, I'd like to thank everybody for attending. I'd like to thank the DOT for their presentation and the directors, and see no other business before this committee. I'll let the record reflect that we're adjourned at 2:57.